Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Many people have asked, observed President George Bush in a speech last night in Cincinnati. Some worry, he said in his half-hour talk. Some have argued we should wait. He acknowledged in his latest iteration of the message that Saddam Hussein has to go. At one level, President Bush was speaking to the doubters in the country.
Some citizens wonder, after 11 years of living with this problem, why do we need to confront it now? And there's a reason. We've experienced the horror of September the 11th. We have seen that those who hate America are willing to crash airplanes into buildings full of innocent people. Our enemies would be no less willing. In fact, they would be eager to use biological or chemical or a nuclear weapon. Knowing these realities, America must not ignore the threat gathering against us. Facing clear evidence of peril, we cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun that could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
There's some other fine-tuning at play here. Bush says inaction could be the most dangerous tactic. September 11th was present throughout the speech. Americans, he says, could resign themselves to a future of fear. And said Bush, we refuse to live in fear. Connection listeners, is the president talking to you? Is the case for military action any clearer? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us today, Gail Chadwick. She's the congressional correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. She's in Washington. Paul Anger is editor of the Des Moines Register. And we'll start with Stephen Kull, who is director of the Program on International Policy Attitudes at the University of Maryland. Stephen, the public attitudes that we're talking about, in your view, did they have a lot to do with the timing and the content of last night's speech?
I don't think the last night's speech brought anything important or new to the discussion. Americans do see a threat. They've seen this threat for a while. They do think that Saddam Hussein has the ability to employ weapons of mass destruction against the United States. So that's already there. That's not new. They don't feel a sense of urgency, an extreme sense of urgency, nor do they feel an increasing sense of urgency. In fact, polls that have just come out in the last few days show an increasing readiness to work through the UN, for the UN to take whatever time is necessary to go through the process of inspections with a goal of trying to disarm Saddam Hussein.
Paul Anger, is that the same thing that you're hearing reflected in Des Moines from readers of your paper?
Yeah, I think it is. One thing about Iowans are cautious and a bit conservative, and they can be rallied, but they want to know why they should be rallied. They want the evidence, and once they have that, they will support the president. However, the support in Iowa is tracking pretty much along the lines of national support, tracking a little bit lower, but the trend is that people now seem to have more questions about attacking Iraq as the evidence mounts and as the president has outlined his case than they did previously. And over a period of months, some of that support has gone away. In January, we had 58% supporting a possible attack on Iraq. Make that 69%. It's dropped in a poll that we did very recently with the Des Moines Register to 51%.
Gail Chadwick, at the time when both Stephen and Paul are describing, citizens distracted by other things other than the attack on Iraq, it is still the number one story in Washington. Is this something that politicians on both sides are starting to wonder about?
You mean whether it's the number, whether it should be the number one story?
Yeah, they should be spending as much time with it if they're not getting the public as engaged.
You know, what's striking, hearing the last two comments, is how different the response in the Congress is. You would get the impression there that the tide was going in the other direction, that there's a sense of urgency to line up with the president and with this resolution, which is likely to pass very easily, despite concerns that the public has about it. And yes, Democrats have been very eager to get the subject back to the economy. And interestingly enough, this week, leaders in both houses on the Republican side have said they too want to talk about the economy. But the fact is, on Capitol Hill right now, the war is the first subject, the second, the third, and there really isn't a fourth.
Do you get the sense, Gail, that there's something of, I mean, panic would be too strong a word, but concern, I guess, at the White House that for all the attention that they've put to this, that it's not deriving the public attention that perhaps the way they might wish?
I think they're looking to the congressional vote to give them some leverage. And it's interesting, too. The president has said repeatedly that war is not inevitable. And there were some comments this week by members of his administration that disarmament would be the same thing as regime change, which seems to me beginning to lay the groundwork for the possibility of not going forward. And if that happens, I think you'll hear Democrats, while delighted that we're not going to war, very concerned that they might have been, you know, tricked into spending the fall talking about a bogus issue, when the issue they wanted to talk about, the economy, health care, prescription drugs, and could have won on, was sidelined.
Stephen, when you look at the information that you're getting from the polls, is it the economy and prescription drugs and the list that Gail just went through that are, in fact, at the forefront of people's interest and attention?
Yes, that's correct. Iraq is important to people, and it has just gotten ahead of terrorism as a priority. But domestic issues, health care, the economy, and so on, those do rank higher, and they do want to see more discussion of those issues.
And so, Paul, when Iowans hear the president speaking about, you know, never wanting to live in fear again, the possibility of a mushroom cloud, that, I mean, the fairly dramatic casting of the threat, are there going to be people who say, this guy's working too hard to make this case?
Well, I think you've seen that right along. And I think what you saw last night was a tactical speech by the president, who sees the same polls that everybody else does, and does polls and has the pulse of the country, or you would think that he would. And I think the speech last night was tactical. It was aimed at the people who he needs to win over through a process that would include the UN, it would include allies, it would include Congress, and so forth and so on. It would include saying last night the war is not imminent or inevitable. It would be winning over people like Iowans, and there are a lot of them out there, who may be able to support this even while they're concerned with the economy and the Medicare reimbursement in Iowa and prescription drugs and that sort of thing. They might be able to be won over, but it has to be sort of a process, and I think last night's speech was a tactical step along that process.
Now, you've got one particularly hotly contested House seat, another Senate seat that's being fought over in Iowa. Is Iraq part of that either of those campaigns?
Well, Iraq is a part of it, and one of the congressional races here is a longtime Republican, Congressman Jim Leach, who actually has come out and said that he cannot support the resolution in front of Congress right now. He's running against a very interesting Democratic opponent, but I would say in general, Iraq is not what's on the front burner in these congressional races or in the Senate race. What's on the front burner is the high cost of prescription drugs, the economy. There have been some layoffs in Iowa recently. The Medicare reimbursement for Iowa is a big issue here. And so, I think Iraq is an issue. I don't think it's the major issue.
Gail Chadwick, I wonder if I can ask you to look ahead a little bit. If what we're talking about is the type of information that politicians are getting in Washington in terms of whether or not we'll see more outspoken divisions over the president's plan, as Democrats may sort of embolden themselves of feeling that they don't have to stick to a party line, like we're seeing John Edwards and a few others.
I think Edwards' speech yesterday was really brilliant, because he managed at once to align himself solidly with the resolution. That is, Iraq is a threat. I, as a Democrat, have no problem using American force in the world. None of them mentioned that Democrats laced their speeches with in, you know, the debate in 1991 over the first Gulf War, where you have someone like Tom Daschle talking about the loss of a single life not being worth it if another day of diplomacy could help, you know, really anchored on the loss of life. There's very little talk like that, kind of fear of going to war. But what Edwards did was align himself solidly with the president and also make what I think will be a very key issue in the presidential campaign in 2004, which is leadership isn't just dominating by military power. It's getting others to go on board. It's convincing them that our interests and theirs are united. It's building coalitions. And many Democrats, from John Kerry to Biden, to especially John Edwards, are trying to make the claim that they care more about building coalitions than the Bush administration. And that is an issue that resonates very strongly with the public. They don't want to see the United States go into this alone. And I think Edwards is onto an important point here. It allows him to raise his voice and to make pointed criticism, but at the same time not looking weak and dovish.
Stephen Cull, it's an interesting observation that Gail's making. Does that show up in public opinion polling?
100%. The biggest concern in the American public's mind is whether we will be going into this alone. And only a small minority says that they're ready for the U.S. to go in without allies and without U.N. approval. And on the question of the congressional resolution, in a poll that we did last week with Knowledge Networks, 60% said that they did not want Congress to give over that power to make the decision to Congress. However, if the resolution specified that the U.S. could only go in to Iraq with U.N. approval, then three-quarters said that it would be okay. This is basically the idea that Senator Levin has been promoting. So if there is U.N. approval, if there's participation in general, you get a much stronger level of support. And at this point, Congress the public doesn't want this moving ahead without pulling everybody together and without Congress participating in the process.
Some of which was echoed in the president's speech last night when he talked about going forward with allies. There was no reference to doing anything on his own or the United States acting on its own. Stephen, I want to thank you for being with us for the start of our program.
Thank you.
Stephen Cull is director of the Program on International Policy Attitudes at the University of Maryland. Connection listeners will continue our conversation with Paul Anger from the Des Moines Register and Gail Chaddick, congressional correspondent with Christian Science Monitor. Your calls at 1-800-423-8255. And whether or not the reflection of a change in public opinion that we're discussing on this program is a reflection of any kind of change that you're sensing, public opinion in conversations you're having with friends or around the dinner table. 1-800-423-TALK is our number. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. This hour we're discussing the speech by the president last night, made at the Cincinnati Museum Center to a select group of people who remained largely quiet through the balance of the speech, though they did rise to their feet a couple of times at the end when he made his driving the point home remarks. Gail Chaddick, who's with us on the program, referred a little earlier in our conversation to use of the reference of the value of one American life, and it was something that came up in a pointed way in the president's speech last night.
I'm not willing to stake one American life on trusting Saddam Hussein. Failure to act would embolden other tyrants, allow terrorists access to new weapons and new resources, and make blackmail a permanent feature of world events. The United Nations would betray the purpose of its founding and prove irrelevant to the problems of our time. And through its inaction, the United States would resign itself to a future of fear. That is not the America I know. That is not the America I serve. We refuse to live in fear.
President George Bush speaking last night in a half-hour address that the White House billed as a speech to the American people, the White House taking note of the fact that there is not any building of support for military action in Iraq. In fact, there may be a diminishing somewhat of that. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. We've got with us on the line Salam al-Mariati. He's director of Muslim Public Affairs Council. It's an American Muslim advocacy organization based in Los Angeles. Salam, you had a chance to watch the president last night.
Yes, I did.
Any sense of a softening in the message that he's sending out, or a change that struck you?
No, I don't think there was anything new in what the president was saying yesterday. I think if there was anything that was different in terms of degrees, it was making the point that war was not inevitable, or that there was more talk about disarmament as opposed to regime change. But I've noticed that within the last few weeks that that's been the major message from this administration, sort of putting adding to the clock, so to speak, that, you know, 2 weeks ago you may have felt that the clock was ticking and within days we're going to go to war. But now it may be a matter of weeks or months in terms of war. And then the other point that I noticed that towards the end of the speech was his direct comments to the generals of Iraq that if they obey the orders of Saddam Hussein, that the United States would bring them into a war crimes tribunal, which I also found interesting because the United States is not signed to the International Courts Commission for War Crimes. So
I caught that contradiction at the same time. But he was also speaking specifically to the people of Iraq and said in words that I found more specific than we've heard before that the United States and our allies, I'm quoting him here, will help the Iraqi people rebuild their economy and create the institutions of liberty in a unified Iraq at peace with its neighbor. I mean, there was a specific reference to an understanding that whatever happens in that region, he's certainly paying attention to the people, and that the United States is not at odds with the people there, just the regime.
That's been a common theme, even with his father, that we're not at odds with the people. The problem is the results are usually killing the Iraqi civilians. Over a million Iraqis have been killed from the sanctions. Whenever we're going to take a military action in Iraq, it's going to be the people that are going to get hurt first, not Saddam. And most of the policies that I think have been proven to be failures in Iraq have hurt the people, have made the dictatorship stronger. So I don't think Iraqis or Muslims in general have a sense of confidence with any words about liberty. I think they've been betrayed twice in 91 when they rose up against the dictator and then felt betrayed. And then in 96 in the north, the same thing happened. So even though those words might resonate well in a political speech, people take those words very seriously throughout the Muslim world, but don't get a sense that any policy is going to give them liberty.
Salam, I know you've got to run your kids off to school, so I'll thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Salam al-Mariati is Director of Muslim Public Affairs Council in Los Angeles. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, join us as we talk about the shift, the tuning in the president's message that was apparent in his speech last night. With us as guests on the program, the editor and vice president of the Des Moines Register in Iowa, Paul Anger, and Gail Chaddick, congressional correspondent with the Christian Science Monitor. We're going to go first to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Patty's on the line. Hi, Patty.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks for calling.
What I always wonder when I listen to speeches about this subject, and particularly from the president, is you have to assume that as an average citizen, there's quite a bit of information that we do not have, information from the CIA and matters of national security. So it's very difficult for the average citizen to actually make a decision about whether this is a good idea or not, because there are a lot of things, I assume, that we do not know.
You know what was interesting about that, though, Patty, is that last night in the speech, the president said, when he was talking about nuclear weapons, he said, many people have asked how close Saddam Hussein is to developing a nuclear weapon. Well, we don't know exactly, and that's the problem. It's a kind of an interesting turn on the observation that you're making, that they're missing information as well.
Yes, but do you think that there is information that the administration have that gives them a sense of urgency, things about anthrax or things
right.
that they don't want to disclose? Because a previous guest said that most people don't feel a sense of urgency about this, but maybe that's because we don't have all the information, and we never will.
Gail Chaddock, can you help Patty on this one?
Oh, it's a very good question. When you go back and look at the groundwork that President Kennedy laid in the Cuban Missile Crisis, actually showing people satellite imageries and talking through the specific nature of the threat, we're not seeing anything at that level. I think that's, again, where Congress becomes important, because you have a number of congressmen who have seen in intelligence, you know, closed intelligence briefings, more information, and come out of it saying, I am more convinced than I was before. But, you know, in the end, we're asking the American public to take their word for it. And I think that there really is going to be a push, even with a Congress that's going to vote for a resolution, a push to make the case even clearer. Not to say because of 9/11 we're going to war, but to answer the question, what's happened in the last 4 months that has made going to war now more imperative? And that question has not been answered, not previously and not in the speech last night.
Even the use of a couple of satellite photographs, which were released to the newspapers and widely published today, Patty, saying, you know, this is a place, a factory that was used before. It was bombed. Now you can see an updated photograph. It was rebuilt. I mean, there's still not a lot of specificity in that sort of stuff. What's it going to take for you, Patty, to, you know, look at what the president's saying and sign off on it? I mean, do you need to see more evidence yourself or hear more evidence?
No, I don't. And I guess what I'm saying is that I can't make a decision. I realize that. I mean, I can have an opinion, but it's always with that little bit of caution, you know, that I guess I need to trust those people. And it's frightening. I want to know, but I know I never will. So I guess I just have to decide, well, how much do I trust the president? How much do I trust the Congress? And that's what it comes down to.
Patty, thanks for your call. To Paul Anger, the use of supporting material like satellite photos, when that comes to your desk, do you say, yeah, we got to get this on the front page? How do you use that?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think the use of satellite photos, unless there was somebody at a telestrator with a pointer and so forth, making sense of what you're seeing, that's a very difficult thing to reproduce in a newspaper. I think the last caller raised some interesting questions about trust. We can think back to some of us to the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, and I think it was Robert McNamara standing there with a pointer, and later you found that that was not all that it seemed to be at the time. It seemed to be extremely credible and so forth. I think when you put this sort of thing on the air or in print, there's still a level of trust that you have to have that goes past just sort of the physical evidence that you're seeing.
And Gail, that's a really fine line for the politicians in Washington between politicizing the information that's known, capitalizing on it, and putting it into that area where it's hard to trust because you know that it's being used for political purposes, right?
I think the administration has made some very major mistakes, thoughtless mistakes, leading up to this. That includes comments, Andrew Card making a reference to introducing new products, in September, not, during August. Even comments the president has made, because of what he did to my dad, just kind of flippant things that look like either we're eager to go to war or we're taking it lightly. The speech last night had none of that. It was very sober, straightforward and resolved. But those careless comments, the use of the war in political campaigns, leaked emails to people that, Republican GOP emails that in effect say we're using the war for political gain. This sort of thing creates a sense of distrust, mm-hmm. and a sense that what this is really about is an election campaign, and it's too serious for that. And frankly, I don't understand why they did it. I think, to me, one of the most telling changes in this debate and the one in 81 is the clip you read at the beginning of this segment, where the president said, "I am not willing to stake one American life on trusting Saddam Hussein." The American life he was talking about isn't a life over, a serviceman, a woman's life over there. It's a life here. It's 9/11 that's changed that calculation. We're talking about lives in this country as well as the lives that might potentially be lost over there. And that, I think, changes the dynamic. It creates, at least in the Congress, a sense that no one wants to look like if another attack occurs, it was their reluctance mm-hmm. to authorize use of force that might be responsible.
1-800-423-8255 to Galesburg, Illinois. Christian's on the line. Hi, Christian.
Good morning. I have watched the television advertisements for congressional and senatorial candidates. And in not one of them have I seen any reference to the war or to Saddam Hussein or anything even remotely close to it.
Right.
The talk is about prescription drugs, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I assume, based upon what I know of politics, that these commercials are made and aired because of polls the candidates have taken which tell them what the people are concerned about. So if that is true, my question is, why should there be any great interest on the part of any congressman or senator who's up for election this year in rushing to support the president if the people don't care what he does, which is the implication of the lack of interest or the lack of emphasis on the war in their commercials?
What do you think about that? I mean, we're told on one hand, Christian, that the... this country could be on its way to war in a matter of months, and should that not be at the center of an election campaign from both sides?
Well, the problem is, first of all, I think the administration from September 11th of 2001 on mm-hmm. Was emphasizing that we should live normal lives, that we should go out and shop, that we should do all, that we should not permit the terrorists to win. Now, it takes quite a change, I think, on the part of most people to think, well, gee, I've been doing the things he said, now he tells me I must prepare for war. Mm-hmm. I think there's a big disconnect here, and I think there's a big level of disbelief in what the administration is saying and doing. Now, I think that's unfortunate, because I think the administration is very sincere about what it wants to do in Iraq. But I'm not so sure that the people of the country believe they are sincere. And I think they're tending to dismiss it, which would be, let me just say it's unfortunate from several points of view.
Paul Anger, it brings us back to what Gail was saying about the inability of this administration to get whatever message it wants to get out in a coherent way. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think I do, and I think we've seen sort of a change, and I'm not sure that it's been a change in conscious, coherent strategy over a period of time, but I think it's sort of been a change that's reacted to the feedback they're getting, the pulse of the country, and that sort of thing. And early on, there was a momentum after 9/11 where you could see 69-70% of the country would say, let's get them and on to Iraq. Iraq is next. And that was last December, and now you don't see anywhere near so much of that. The momentum from 911 has sort of faded. 911 will never be forgotten, but the momentum from that that President Bush, I think, was counting on early on, and as this developed, and I think that helps explain some of the flip comments. I think there was a bit possibly of overconfidence in the administration that Saddam is universally hated. He's obviously a threat. He's somebody that we have to get out of there, and in the momentum after 9-1-1, we're going to be able to do this. Well, it hasn't been that easy, and the president's really trying now. In the speech last night, he pulled in what President Kennedy said in the missile crisis. He pulled in the Clinton administration saying that we need a regime change in Iraq. So he's pulling in. He pulled in 9-1-1 again, attempting to recreate some of the momentum from that and make that connection. So I think that there's a clear understanding now on the part of the administration and the president that something has gone off track here, and they need to get the American people's attention.
Okay, Christian, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Nice to have you on the program. Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And a conversation this morning about the speech by President George Bush last night, trying to refocus attention on the issues that he considers important as his administration pushes both the U.S. Congress and the U.N. Security Council for strong, unequivocal resolutions which would give the United States the chance to be the lead country in pushing for either disarmament or regime change or some kind of neutralization of Saddam Hussein. The message appears to be changing a little bit, but in very subtle ways, and we're interested in knowing how you're hearing it, whether or not you think this is an acknowledgement by the president, by the Republicans, that the issues that are most pressing to people in this country are economic issues, or and does that indicate that there's any kind of unanimity on Iraq, or that it may in fact not have the interest or the attention that certainly it did even a matter of weeks ago? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston University, this is W.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection.
After 11 years during which we've tried containment, sanctions, inspections, even selected military action, the end result is that Saddam Hussein still has chemical and biological weapons and is increasing his capabilities to make more. And he is moving ever closer to developing a nuclear weapon.
President Bush speaking last night in Cincinnati, restating his case for why it's important that the United States focus at this particular moment on Saddam Hussein, his regime in Iraq. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. With us on the program, Gail Chadwick, congressional reporter with the Christian Science Monitor, and Paul Anger, editor and vice president of the Des Moines Register. And we'll go to Boston next. Paz is waiting on the line. Hi, Paz.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I just wanted to say that the caller that called earlier, Patty, I resonate a little bit with her because I think that we have to realize that the people that we have in power, the government, the president, the cabinet, Congress, are there to do this job. In fact, we hired them because we voted them in and we pay for them to do their job. And mm-hmm. I think that it's important that we realize that that's what they're there for.
And that as voters, they need to be trusted to do the job well?
Well, yeah. I mean, sure, we can't trust them completely. Trust is a tough word for me to reconcile in this case. But just the fact that no matter what we do, we need to let them do their job. And they have more information and more experience and more, but by virtue of their role, they're more qualified to do this job than we are. Right. So we can have an opinion, but not so much judgment power.
And the other side of it, too, is whether you voted Democrat or Republican, there are supposed to be opposition people there holding the government to account, right?
True.
So what do you think? I mean, has the president made a case that you feel is strong enough, at least for the time being, for him to continue pursuing a strongly worded resolution that could ultimately give him the authority to use force?
Yes, I think that what he said last night was that we need to have the power to use this force if necessary. And that's the only time it should be used, if it's determined to be necessary, right?
Mm-hmm. Although, Gail Chadwick, there were a couple of references in the speech last night, and I think it was, forgive me whether, I can't remember if it was you or Paula made the observation earlier in the program, where he seems to be drawing in his claws a little bit. I hope this will not require military action, but it may. Not sounding
that's
very
right.
much like, you know, Rumsfeld's testimony before the committee, and later in the same speech approving this resolution does not mean that military action is imminent and avoidable, or unavoidable, excuse me.
That's right. No, I've found the comments in the last few weeks, especially the reference to disarmament perhaps being the same as regime change, quite interesting, because I think they are trying to give a sense that while there is a willingness to use force, there is not an eagerness to do it. And I really credit Republicans and Democrats in the Congress for pushing for that change of tone. I mean, you had people, as high up in the party as House Majority Leader Dick Armey, expressing public doubts about this war. Was the threat really that serious? And would preemptive action really change the character of the United States? Armey made a very interesting comment yesterday. He came, supported the resolution, but he said America has never been an aggressive nation. It's a matter of conscience. It's a matter of who we are, who we've been, who we should be. For the United States to act first, the threat must be clear and present. It is. I think that's a real counter to the tone that the administration had set earlier, that we act alone in the world, no one is going to be equal to our power. The whole tone of the new strategic doctrine that the administration released a couple weeks ago is something that I think Congress has been working on them to buff down, to get back to some understanding of how this country acts in the world, mm-hmm. that we also act in the context of international law. It's not something we simply disregard. The views of our allies are something that matters to us. That's not something we simply disregard. And I think that congressional pressure from Republicans like Armey and in the Senate, Senator Lugar, have been a very useful check on some of the more strident members of the administration.
Okay, Paz, thanks very much for your call.
Thank you.
1-800-423-8255 to Providence, Rhode Island, and Jill's on the line. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
I'm astonished that we've all been co-opted into seeing this as the issue to be talking about. It doesn't feel to me like it's a real issue, and it never has. And the fact that the president is now pulling back once again from the most strident kind of rhetoric to pulling back to some other point of view says to me that it wasn't real to begin with.
Right.
And that it was used at a very odd moment when the Republicans, when they thought that it would help us with their reelection. Nobody that I know considers this an issue.
Okay,
an issue.
But you said you can't believe that we've been co-opted. It sounds to me, listening to you, that you haven't been co-opted and your friends have not been co-opted, that people aren't buying it, and that's what the poll numbers are showing.
But in some way I have been co-opted because I'm talking to you on the show. So we have all been co-opted in some way, you, me, everybody. And there's something very insidious about that that's, to me, almost more frightening than anything else.
Let's hear from Paul Anger on this, because, Paul, you have to make a decision every day what the editorial is going to be about, what goes on the front page of the Des Moines Register, and that's an issue, you know? I mean, just because this is what the president of the nation wants to talk about, and almost exclusively, how does it drive the coverage? How do you push back? I mean, is that an editorial thing that goes on regularly at the paper?
Well, I think that, absolutely. It goes on in every editorial board meeting, and it goes on in every meeting of the news managers when we decide how to place the news. Mm-hmm. This morning, the president's speech led our newspaper, it was not a banner headline. It was a two-column headline, but it was the weightiest headline on the page, and we ran the entire text of his speech at the register. But I think that there's been sort of a progression of attention paid to this. I think that only a matter of weeks, certainly no more than a matter of, months ago, this didn't seem like a real issue from a common sense standpoint. I think that the attention has grown some from the standpoint that this is very important to the President of the United States, and it's become very important to the Congress. And the President is on primetime TV talking about this and so forth and so on. And so I think people, whether they feel co-opted or not, are coming to realize that that whether it should be the main issue, whether it should be the top agenda of this country right now, it's certainly on top of the agenda of the President of the United States, and there's a very real chance that we could see bullets and missiles and bloodshed and American lives being lost, and you can't ignore that. And so I think over a period of time, sure, this has garnered more of a share of the headlines, and properly so.
It's interesting, though, Jill, that, you know, if we compare the weight given to the president speaking about war in October 2002 to the president speaking about war in October 2001, how, you know, the not so much suspicion but questioning is much more there than it was in that kind of gripping aftermath of September 11, 2001.
Well, the gripping aftermath of September 11th was that we had a real human being who was a real enemy who seems to have slipped through our fingers. And so now we're just sort of doing kind of a buckshot, a scattershot approach to whoever we think we might be able to catch in our web. And I hear myself saying the word we, and I'm appalled because I don't believe that we should be doing this as a nation. There is a real person out there, or at least we think he's still alive, and he is the real danger to us. He's the one who penetrated our fortress, not Saddam Hussein.
Eye on the ball then. Osama bin Laden, not Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call, Jill.
You're welcome.
To Newburyport, Massachusetts now, and Mary Ann's joining us. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I listened with interest to your couple of your previous callers who suggested that it's our senators' responsibilities to take the evidence under consideration and to work in our best interest. And I would suggest that another aspect of their job is to listen to the will of the people. Yesterday, I was watching the Senate debate and became very angry when I kept hearing Senator John Warner of Virginia and the other senator, I believe his name is Allen, also from Virginia.
What were they saying?
Repeatedly state that the majority of the American people were behind George Bush and this plan to invade Iraq. And I felt prompted to call them, to correct them, and say, no, the majority of the people are not behind George Bush.
I assume you didn't get Senator Warner on the line.
No, I got one of his staff persons, and I expressed my feelings about this. And I'm always very conscious that I'm from Massachusetts, and we tend to march to the beat of a different drummer up here. So I asked his staff person, you know, how are the calls coming through to his office? And Senator Warner's staff person told me that 90% of the calls that he was receiving were opposed to going into war with Iraq.
So what's your sense of that? What do you think that tells us?
Well, I feel a sense of betrayal that we elect these people to go down and represent us, and they are on the floor of the Senate stating exactly the opposite of what we are telling them.
Gail Chadwick, politics.
It's a really good point. Actually, the last two points, I thought Jill's comments were very interesting as well. What's going on with polls is, it really, like many polls, depends on how you ask the question. People who are certainly in favor of the president taking a strong, you know, stand against terrorism, against threats to national security. One of the most interesting issues to me is how bin Laden got lost. I mean, imagine what this campaign would be like if we were back on the page we were right after 9/11, when members of Congress almost uniformly said, we give the president authority to use force against those responsible for taking down the towers and attacking the Pentagon, and we will hold the administration to that. That's been totally forgotten, and I think both your callers are right about that point. If we were talking about bin Laden right now, we'd be saying, where is he? Why haven't we brought to justice the people that took down the towers? And what's wrong with our national security effort? But in changing the subject to Iraq, you shift ground completely, and it's astute politically, but whether it's fair to the public is a whole other matter.
Just look ahead for us, if you can, Gail, at where we are in the congressional schedule. We're expecting a vote in the House this week and the Senate next week?
Well, actually, the Senate is now talking about voting as well Thursday night. The House will vote on Thursday. The Senate, I personally think it'll kick into next week. This Congress is so far behind on just about everything that's important. You know, the appropriations haven't been done. Homeland Security is still in limbo. You know, it's a Congress that took ambitious steps on a lot of fronts. And this week we're facing the fact that almost none of it's going to get done. So I suspect the Senate vote is going to kick into next week. But to both your callers, I would have to say there is no doubt that that resolution is going to pass. But I would say one other thing, that the debate is still very interesting because Democrats are putting some markers down. Have all means been exhausted? What is the standing of the United Nations? Congress used to dump on the United Nations regularly. Now you're seeing real support for the notion of some framework for alliances and law to go forward. You haven't heard that in a long time in the Congress. And most interestingly to me, what kind of plan do we have to form a new government if there is a military intervention, a stable regime? And look at what's happening in Afghanistan, where already the promise of what we said we would do to rebuild that country is falling short. Those are important questions, and they are being raised by members of Congress on both sides of the aisle.
Gail, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Gail Chadwick, congressional correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. And Marianne, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Paul Anger, editor and vice president of the Des Moines Register, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you, Dick.
Earlier in the program, we talked with Steve Kull, director of the Program in International Policy Attitudes at the University of Maryland, and Salam Al-Mariati, director of the Muslim Public Affairs Council based in Los Angeles. Connection listeners, check out our forum page. We're at theconnection.org. Exchange views with other listeners. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.